Have you ever wondered whether the problems in the world today would exist if we had deeper connection to ourselves, others, and the environment, and acted from that place?
Welcome to the Conscious Action Podcast with your hosts, Brian Berneman and Kayla Grimble, who believe that connection is the key to taking conscious action as individuals and creating a better world.
We are here to raise awareness and inspire meaningful action by sharing stories, knowledge, and conversations with thought leaders and changemakers.
From sustainability to well-being and everything related to conscious living, our mission is to empower you to be the change that you want to see in the world.
Welcome to a new episode of the Conscious Action Podcast. I am your host, Brian, and I have the pleasure for this episode to be talking with my dear friend, Nick Morrison, that we have been in this kind of similar circles now for a few years. Nick has been part of a few of our events, and such a pleasure to be here with you, Nick, to once again have a little of a talk about what's going on in the world and what can we do, and taking action and taking conscious action. So first of all, thank you for being here. And for those that don't know you, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me. I feel very humbled to be asked. It's funny, introducing yourself. What parts of me do I want to introduce and share? I guess if I talk about how I make money, my professional character, I am the founder and director of Go Well Consulting, a sustainability consultancy, and we help businesses understand the massive social and environmental issues we're facing and how they can transition their businesses into becoming regenerative, circular and inclusive. And then I'm also an avid football player. I play football every Saturday for the mighty Ellerslie Diamonds. And I am a recent father. I've just got a new six-year-old daughter. I'm a son to my mum and dad who live in Christchurch, my brother to my sister and brother who live over in London, and my other sister who lives in Wellington. There's a few things about me. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you. And I would love for you to share a little bit before we get into some of the topics that I want to discuss is, what were you doing before you got into sustainability, as well as how did this come about in your life? I know a little bit, but for people to know it.
It's interesting, because I look back on it a bit now, because I think sustainability is this interesting industry where people are like, well, how did you get into it? It's not kind of like law or accounting or construction where everyone kind of knows you go into university to a course, or you go and become a labourer and then an apprentice or whatever, and there's kind of a clear pathway, where sustainability doesn't really have that. And I get, asked a lot by especially younger people who are at university or just left, or, early in their careers, sort of wanting to know how I, quote unquote, got into sustainability. And I guess, the way I just kind of have tried to really follow my heart, my gut, my instincts, my passions, I guess. I trained as a fitness trainer, I did a sports science degree at Otago University. I had no idea what I wanted to do when I was last year at school. I remember that pressure of like, what are you going to be? What are you going to do? What are you going to be? I don't know. And then I went to Otago University on a day trip I used to grow up in Timaru, and we went down there as a school and went to the PE school, and I was like, this is amazing. I had these people filming people throwing something and analyzing the angles of their joints and how to create more force and how to even just how sprinters start and how they can get more power off the first step. And I was a real sports junkie and really loved that, and I was like, I want to do that. And so I was lucky enough to get in there, and I did my 4 years in Dunedin, absolutely loved it and really loved my degree, and came out sort of knowing a lot about anatomy and physiology and how exercise impacts those things. And I then got into being a personal trainer. I was working at Les Mills, and I worked there for 6 months in Wellington and then moved up to Auckland and was 2 years here. And then I went over to London and I lived over there 4.5 years. And half that time I was working in a Pilates studio, trained up on Pilates over there. And the other half I was working for myself, and I'd hoon around on my little scooter around London and visit wealthy people in their houses or in the park or sometimes their in their workplaces. And yeah, and I sort of did that full time. And then I travelled, and I travelled a lot while I was in London, especially sort of West Europe. And then I went to Brazil for the Football World Cup. I never got to Argentina. I'm sorry. I would love to go there. I will go there one day. But went to Brazil for the Football World Cup, and then had another 5 months after that going through Central and South America. And it was such a impact on me. I guess it's just seeing the pollution and seeing the inequality. It really like hit me that, you know, it was, I'll never forget the day I was on this boat and visiting the San Blas Islands, which are between Colombia and Panama. And you can drive there in a few hours, but you can also do these boat trips when you're backpackers and you've got all the time in the world, and you take a few nights and you stop off at these islands. And one island, a small little thing, only took you 20 minutes to walk around, but one side of it where we landed, beautiful white sand, beautiful palm trees, coconuts on the ground that you could crack open, and clear blue water, like stunning. Walked up and over this island, just a small hill up there over the side, and it was just plastic strewn all over the other side. And just my heart just sunk. And I had a few experiences like that through Central and South America, because they just don't have the infrastructure we have here in New Zealand and as I was used to in London, etc., which collect the plastics and the trash and take it away somewhere else. Over there, they literally just throw it on the ground. Or what was actually happening, we found out, was that a community that lives, I forget the name of the people now, which is really bad, but there's a native people that live on the San Blas Islands, and they were so used to, you know, just eating fish and coconuts and just throwing those into the ocean, and that would feed the ecosystem and carry on in the circle of life. Well, they've now been, I'll use the word, infiltrated by big food conglomerates, you know, your Nestle's and co. And they just had all these plastic packaged food now, and they had like a little tuck shop there that you go in and people would buy all the stuff, and they'd still just throw it on the ground. They hadn't changed their behaviours. And they just would throw this plastic on the ground, and people like they'd ring this big bell. They rang it while we were there visiting, and these women of the village would come through, pick it up, and go and chuck it in the ocean. Oh, I also remember when we were before we left Colombia, I can't remember the tiny little seaside town that you leave from, but where we caught the boat from, their waste management infrastructure just involved putting it into sacks, and they were loading up this boat and they'd put bricks in the bottom and they'd drive out, I don't know how long, 10 minutes, 20 minutes out straight into the ocean, and then drop it off the side of the boat. And so just seeing those things and kind of learning those things was really confronting. And then also, yeah, the inequalities, like you see, like I said, I haven't been to Argentina, but what I saw in Brazil, especially like in Rio de Janeiro, wow, like you've got incredible wealth and then just complete poverty, you know, right side by side. It was so like you see it right in front of you, both extremes. And yeah, so I guess had all that experience traveling and came back to New Zealand just feeling like helping, you know, wealthy housewives get a tighter bum wasn't really my passion anymore, or wasn't really helping the world, and it wasn't really using my skills and my privilege to give back and to help the world become a better place, really. And so I took the opportunity to work at Innocent Packaging. I got offered a job there by Tony Small when he'd, I think the business was a year old when he offered me a job. So it was this young startup business, and he was like, it's compostable packaging. I was like, oh my God, that's the solution to the world's problems, quite naively. But and I took that job as a sales job there and quickly moved into being the sustainability person there, and eventually became the sustainability manager. And just that was my door into sustainability, I guess. And I just loved that it was solutions focused, having, I guess, traveled and seen all these problems and seen all this stuff and being quite confronted by that, and then now working in a business that was part of trying to create solutions, I just really loved that. And so, yeah, and I was there 2.5 years, and then it was time to go and do my own thing again. And I thought I had enough knowledge to kind of help other businesses with their sustainability, and so I left and started up Go Well Consulting, and that'll be 3 years old in November. Wow. So that's kind of how I got into sustainability.
Yeah, it's an incredible path, and I think that this is one of the things that I find so interesting with a lot of different people, that we all have a different background, we all come from different experiences, and those that I find this interesting just because growing up in Argentina, you see that inequality in the street. And in a sense, it doesn't have as much as an impact as perhaps it had on you. But at the same time, I grew up knowing that that is also the reality. There's that. And growing up with, people just checking, going to McDonald's or Burger King or whatever, and eating in things in the car, and then just throwing it out the window.
Yeah,
like we didn't know better. Like that was the thing. It's like that's just what you do, and I think that's one of the interesting things. And to be able to come to an understanding, and to be able to then actually create something out of that, like to be able to say in your experience, like, wow, that had a huge impact. I need to perhaps focus on in that direction and create the change that I want to see. And this is something that I find with the work that you do, that it's so important, because there is a huge lack of education. And like a lot of times, like what we do with the Conscious Action, we focus mostly on individuals, and you focus on businesses. And businesses have a huge lack of education in terms of what is right and what is wrong in terms of what they are doing, because also the parameters are set up by policies or government. And as long as they are going within that, they think that they are doing the right thing. And sometimes it's not the right thing. And having people that can educate and has the knowledge, and has not only the knowledge of saying this might not be the best thing to do, but also we can do that, and not just saying you're doing wrong here.
Yeah, it's a really interesting paradigm to work in, I guess, with businesses, because they play to the rule book that they've been given, as you touched on there, like governments write policy, and that sets laws, and then businesses operate that, or society, and operates within those laws. And we have inherited a economic system and set of policies that are just so obviously not sustainable. Anybody who's got half a brain, I feel that it's just so obvious. We can't keep ripping out resources out of the ground. We can't keep destroying our soils. We can't keep polluting our oceans. We can't keep, killing off species. So it's just so obviously not sustainable. But those businesses are somewhat tied to that existing system, and then that economic system. And so, changing it is hard. And we, because we mostly work with, small to medium enterprises, SMEs, and they are so often people who get it. And because I think a key thing I like to really stress too is businesses are made up of people, human beings. So, like Conscious Action, sure, you might target the kind of the individual, but it could be the CEO of that business that decides whether to, use, option A and option B, and one being vastly better for the environment than the other. And so it's really important to remember that these are human beings making these decisions. I think often they hide behind being a business when it's really they need to, I think, take responsibility for their personal actions in their role as a business person just as much as in their personal life, I guess. But, to go back to my point about businesses sort of being in a tough position at times because they are up against competitors. Again, in this system we've got, it's all about having competitors, and you try and undercut the other one, you try and steal their business, you try and compete with them on and on. And so they're trying to deal with that, and then there's these massive issues coming at them around climate change and soil loss and ocean acidification, all these things, and a lot of them don't understand. It's all quite overwhelming, and they're still trying to make sure that they've got enough revenue coming into their business and profit to pay their staff and keep people in their jobs and do all these things. So there is a lot going on for these business people, and it is challenging. But I love working in that space and being just really honest and matter of fact about these issues we're facing. Like, it's just so in our face. Totally understand that you've got to make a buck and your business has got to be able to, keep paying its people. But also, we're careering towards absolute environmental and social breakdown. Like, what are we going to do? This is not sustainable. So it's really a really great play. I enjoy working in that space. It's very, it calls on a lot of different skills, I think. And it's quite, what's the word I'm looking for? Just tests you on quite a few different levels, which I enjoy.
Nice. Yeah. And I think that one of the things, and we touched on this, I think that it was almost 2 years ago now in one of the events that you were a guest speaker. I would love for you to explain a little bit your understanding of what sustainability is, because I know that this word now is being used in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of times, and the event at that time, it was called Beyond Sustainability, just because of that. Like, what does sustainability mean, and how do you communicate that?
Yeah, cool. Well, this is a big test, I think, for someone who claims they're a sustainability consultant. We should be able to have this down and do like a few lines, but this is my best attempt at it. So for me, sustainable means that something can be sustained, right? And then you can have the definitions of timeline there. But generally, in this sustainability space that I work in, we talk about a human lifetime. So if something can be sustained for a sort of human lifetime, you can keep feeding a population for a length of human lifetime. You can sustain a population of fish for a human lifetime. That's kind of a general kind of timeline, and that's being able to sustain something. And so that's sustainable for me. That's the definition of sustainable. And sustainability is more the industry, I guess, or it's more the topic of making things sustainable. And it covers off a lot, but it's generally broken up into sort of three, sometimes four pillars of economic sustainability, social sustainability, and environmental sustainability. And sometimes there's cultural sustainability, sometimes there's other ones as well, but generally those kind of three. And we don't have life on this planet without the planet, without the environment, without our water cycles and our carbon cycles, etc. And then we don't have an economy without society and without people. So it's just really remembering that the economy is the last of those three in terms of importance. Sustainability is kind of looking and understanding across all those three pillars, and putting it into a business context, it's that business making sure that it is being sustainable across those three things. So is it looking after its supply chain? People are going to keep working, or are you exploiting people and they're going, getting paid such low wage that they, have a punctured tire one day and then they can't get to work and they lose their job and they're gone. Is your business, just taking so many resources out of the planet that it's going to destroy that local ecosystem? Is your business, just trying to make a quick buck and then disappear, or are you trying to sustain your economic impacts as well? So, yeah, that's kind of me trying to explain what sustainability is.
And I do think that it's a huge topic, and because lately I've been hearing a lot more about people talking about regeneration instead of sustainability as well, because. And I heard someone, I can't remember who, but this woman that was saying that the reason why she's talking about regeneration and how it's important now was, and she stopped using the word sustainable, was because she said, now we're at a point that we cannot longer sustain things. We need to do something positive.
Yeah, really agree.
And I thought that that was an interesting thing. And I would love for you to explain a little bit, how do you see this in your experience and with the businesses that you work, not only the regeneration, but the circular model instead of the linear model?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, because I was just thinking when I finished giving my definition of sustainability, then for me, the real kind of key is that everything that is sustainable is circular. So you look at the real world, the natural world, everything operates in a circular system. So water falls out of the sky onto the land, goes into the ocean, evaporates back up into the sky, falls back down, keeps going round and round in circles. Everything grows, then it dies, then it decays, then something else grows. You know, there is no such thing as waste. Waste was this made up human phenomenon. Waste is food in the real world. It's just materials moving through a system. So that's how, those are the laws of the real world. And they've been discovered and proven over the last, you know, few thousand years of human existence. And we can't change those. But the economic system and our societal laws, we create those. And we can change those. So there's really only one thing that we can do here in terms of making things fit together. So we have to change how we run our businesses. We have to change our economic laws. We have to change our economic system to become circular. Otherwise, it's just pretty bloody obvious that we're going to run out of resources, and we're going to pollute ourselves into a really bad state, et cetera, et cetera. Like I said right at the start, it's just not sustainable, this current linear extractive model. So yeah, we have to go circular. And yeah, I totally agree with the woman you spoke with, that sustainable is not enough now. Like it's hard, I think, for a lot of people to kind of keep up to speed with this. But the state of the world, and especially the natural systems that govern how the world works, and the weather systems on our planet, in such a bad way that it's not just about sustaining it for now. We have to regenerate. We have to repair all the damage that's been done. And, you know, looking at just climate change, for example, the carbon we're putting up in the atmosphere today, the car that people drove today, or the stuff they ordered online and it got driven to them, and that carbon that was emitted is going up in the atmosphere. It's going to stay up there for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And we're just putting more and more carbon up there. So if we were just to suddenly turn off all carbon being emitted into the world today, it's still going to heat up and heat up and heat up, because it's all up there, it's trapped up there for hundreds of thousands of years. So we need to get that carbon out of it. So we've got to turn off the tap and stop putting it up there, which has been proving really, really challenging. But we've also then got to get it out of there to bring it, the levels of CO2 back down to a level that we can have weather and have climate that our you know, complex beings like humans can survive and be. Yeah, so absolutely we have to go circular. Being circular really is what being sustainable is in my eyes, and we have to be regenerative. We have to give back more than we take, basically. And that's the reality of our generation and our time in human history. We, that's what we've inherited. We can either face up to it and deal with it. And that's, like I was saying before, I really like just being that honesty about it and having those conversations with businesses and business people. Or we can choose to ignore it and, I don't know, just party hard while it lasts and then let the next generation deal with it.
Yeah, and I think that it's very interesting, because there is, I do feel like, and this is just because of the times that we're living, we are seeing more and more with the strike for climate change, like the students and all of the young people, but it's not just the young people. It's also everyone that for the last 50, 60 years had been fighting for this, but just the movement was really small and it didn't have as big of a voice. Now it's like, as you said before, like now you can't not see that we are in a little bit of a problem, and we need to do stuff. But I do think that there's inside of that, and as you said, like when businesses especially, but also this with individuals, when money comes first and our financial well-being comes first, we tend to not look too much to, I'm actually not doing the right thing. But and for businesses, this is huge. And one of the things that I wanted to touch on now and ask you how you experienced this is greenwashing. How do you see this? Like, I see a lot of it, and I am like, I'm still all the time learning, but I'm quite educated in all of this space. And sometimes I still find myself like, oh my God, I didn't catch that.
Yes.
How do you see that going?
Yeah, it's frustrating, really frustrating from me, for both of us, for you as well, Brian, and people who kind of do get it. Because I truly believe in the good of the people. I really believe people want to live in a clean, just, sustainable society, and we don't want to have to worry about climate change, and we don't have to want to worry about our depleted fish stocks and soils and etc. So people want to do the right thing, but there is so much misinformation and people are so confused, and that's really frustrating. A lot of it does come from businesses just not taking responsibility as a business or as human beings. Remember, it's a human being making that decision to put that word degradable on a plastic bag, which I just saw one where I live. My neighbor's got a black plastic bag on this in this carport, and it's got big white degradable. Right, just for anyone who's unsure who's listening, everything is degradable. Degradable just means it will break down into smaller parts, right? So everything, humans are degradable, a rock is degradable, piece of steel is degradable, but they all just degrade over different amounts of time. So that's real greenwashing. But there are also businesses out there and business people who don't know they're greenwashing and get confused, and they're trying to do the right thing. And it is complex, and a good example of greenwashing is around the whole compostable packaging. So if it's all about a kind of the context too, and the compostable packaging, well, especially I think it's important here, quickly side point, to separate compostable packaging and compostable plastics, because compostable packaging includes your wheat straw, your sugar cane, your could be paper, could all of that's fine. All of that composts, no worries. It's the compostable plastics that require the higher heats, around 65 degrees, to then start their process of degrading and breaking back down into carbon, nitrogen, water. So that needs to go to that facility. So the plastics that are out there that are commercially compostable, yes, they are commercially compostable, and yes, it does break back down and continue on in the circle of life, but will they actually get to a compost, you know? And that's where kind of get to, I guess, the role of business, and where I think a lot of business people traditionally have just said, oh, my job is just to put the product into the market and that's it. It's not my role to deal with where it ends its life. But I think that's changing, and you know, very much the principles we teach to our or practice with our clients is that, no, you need to take responsibility for the whole thing. And we've just seen that big announcement by the government of the six products or material types that have got to have a mandatory product stewardship schemes. That's huge. It's a real plug for, I'm going to do a bit political here, but a real plug for the Greens, who talked about doing this pre this term, and they've finally got this in just before the term ends. But it's a massive shift, and you'll see a real explosion of businesses taking responsibility for their products, because people don't seem to understand that we're taking responsibility for them through our taxes and through our local taxes as well. What's the word? Paying your rates, because we pay rates to get rubbish and that collected. So the businesses and that who are creating the rubbish, who know that where it's going to go, they don't have to take any responsibility for it. We then pay council to then pay a big waste management company to pick it up and go and dump it in a hole. It's all quite a broken system. So I've gone a bit off topic here. I'll come back to the greenwashing. But, yeah, greenwashing, I think, in summary, there's definitely businesses that are totally negligent and knowingly misleading the public and their customers, but there's also businesses who are just not quite getting it right and accidentally greenwashing. But they both, in the end of the day, have the same impact, right? They create a confused public and a confused human being who doesn't quite know what, if they're doing the right thing or not when they want to be doing the right thing.
Yeah, but and I think that this is the interesting thing, because you mentioned how, like, in a sense, everyone that is making these decisions are human beings, and the ones that are greenwashing by accident, they are, at least in their mindset, they're in the right path. They perhaps have the wrong information. Eventually, they will be open to consumers like us, saying, like, sending them an email or talking with them and saying, like, hey, like, do you know that this, you're saying that this product is actually compostable when it's not, or whatever it is, and being able to actually communicate, and they would be open to making a change.
Hmm. Yeah, you're definitely seeing that, I think, that people are calling these businesses out and going back to them and saying, hey, I love your product, or I think this is amazing, but the packaging is not right, and or you've got palm oil in it, or you don't, you know, why aren't you fair trade, or what, where's, you know, who's making these clothes or whatever. I think more and more people, especially younger people, I think we're more aware, more connected because we've grown up with the internet, us including myself, these are younger people, but I think that they are asking these questions and we are seeing it, and definitely with the clients that we work with, that those businesses are getting a lot of pressure. And also I think the other key thing there to say is social media, the impact of social media, that you can literally just take a photo right then and there of your burger or of your clothing or of your whatever you just bought and put it up and tag that business in it and say, you know, shame on you, or this is great, or whatever, and that can go across millions of people very rapidly. So businesses have to respond pretty quickly, and I think people are starting to become more and more educated, more and more aware to the greenwashing or to the BS.
Yeah, and touching on this, because I don't know if this is part of the greenwashing or not, but for me sometimes it feels a little bit on an ethical perspective, a little bit of a gray area, is the carbon and carbon neutral and carbon credits. And it's like a business that is creating products that are actually not circular at all and have a huge impact, but then they are offsetting that somehow by getting some credits. And at the end of the day, yes, like they offset it, but for me, and this is just my understanding, and I'm not an expert on this, and perhaps you know a little bit more than me on this, when we are offsetting, we're not really offsetting. We are still creating all of that carbon, all of that impact, and whatever we are offsetting it with, that's going to take a long time to actually offset that.
Yeah, you're right. It's a challenge, and it's, yeah, I guess that's the thing to really underline here. This is really challenging, and shifting out of the economic system that we've inherited to one that is circular, regenerative, inclusive, sustainable is really challenging, and it's going to take time. Hopefully we'll see it happen in our lifetime, but it is going to be stages and steps, and things are not going to be perfect. They'll be messy along the way, but I'm definitely of the attitude of, like, you know, progress, not perfection, and don't let being perfect get in the way of being better, you know, this same kind of concept, really. So, yeah, to carbon offsetting specifically, definitely there's the businesses who just pay to pollute, right? They're like, oh, well, we can afford to just pay some carbon offsets, and we don't really change anything to our business, and we just keep pumping out carbon dioxide into the atmosphere and other greenhouse gases. But there's also those that who are trying really hard to minimise their emissions as much as possible. And so what in New Zealand, there's the two major carbon offsetting organisations, ECOS and Toitū, and they both require their members to go through a process of how to minimise the emissions. So they help them map it and work out what their carbon footprint is. And then they say, right, okay, now you need to tell us how you're going to bring that down. So, for example, one of our clients, Maggie Marilyn, who we've worked through with the Toitū folk, and they are now committing to pretty much going to zero, reluctant to say that because things can happen, but pretty much go to zero air freight. They've been air freighting a lot in the past, but now sea freighting things. So that's a much smaller carbon footprint per garment or per more the stuff they bring in, so the materials they bring in, than what it was from doing it by air freight. And so, yeah, those organisations like Toitū, for example, will say, great, yep, you've got your map footprint now, but before you start offsetting it, you need to show to us how you're going to minimise. So in New Zealand, those two organisations are doing a great job, I think, in really making sure businesses don't just then pay to pollute. But it's always open to a level of interpretation, really, and a spectrum of your own, expectations or morals or whatever around how far businesses should go. But eventually it'll get to a point where they kind of, it matches up and they go, okay, we've tried all this stuff and we literally can't do anything more. We'll now pay to offset. Whereas others might just go, we'll get a bike and we'll get a couple of people in the office a bike and then we'll start offsetting, you know? So all these things are open to exploitation, but I think that carbon offsetting has a really important role to play, and especially if we start increasing the cost of it and putting more tax on it, because we've got to stop putting it into the atmosphere, right? It's really bloody simple and really obvious. But, so a carbon offsetting type system, it does get businesses thinking about that, thinking about how to bring their emissions down, and it is putting money into the building of forests or the innovation of new cooking technology that doesn't use firewood and instead uses, solar powers or whatever. So, yeah, it does. It's not perfect, absolutely, but I think it's progress, and I think it's going the right way. And I think here in New Zealand we've got, good organisations that are not allowing too much exploitation of this system.
That's good. And I found with talking about this, I'm interested to know what has been for what you are seeing in terms of business, what has been the impact of COVID and the lockdown and everything? Because I know that for a lot of businesses, like we started talking essential businesses, and a lot of times for me, like, and this is part of the economy that we have and how it's been, as you've been talking before, like the system is already there in place. There's so many businesses that are selling products that are not essential at all. And I thought, I wonder how is this going to impact the businesses that are creating stuff that we perhaps don't need. But also, how has it impacted just in general?
Yeah, I don't know. There's a piece there to talk about, Brian, and just businesses, as you say, creating, I'll use the word crap. It's just crap that we don't need and, crappy plastic single-use toys or random crap you might get with a Happy Meal or something like that. That is just so wasteful, and it's such the epitome of this linear, wasteful, economic system that we've inherited. So, yeah, there's a lot of businesses out there that I think really need to reconsider what they're actually producing. But also then you're getting into the actual business models. So a lot of when we talk about circular economy and circular economy principles, we talk about rather than ownership. So again, the economic system we've got and the laws that we've inherited, it's all about ownership, right? And we're told about you want to own something and you work hard and you get money and then you own your own car, you own your own house, you own your own clothes, and it's all new and it's all about being kind of bigger and better than the person beside you generally. But circular, if we're going to go circular, we need to look at sharing models, and the classic one is the scooters that we see on our streets now. So there's one scooter and we share it. We come in and we use it for the 5-10 minutes that we want to use it, and then we leave it and someone else uses it. Or a great example of like the a tool library, right? We do books. We've done books forever. Why would we not have libraries for tools, right? Why buy a drill to hang up a picture or whatever you're doing when you can just go and hire it out of a out of a library or loan it out of a library. And then also leasing models, so businesses actually maintain the ownership of the product. So for it might be clothing, you buy a jacket, and rather than actually buying it, you just lease it for whatever price it is per week or per month, and you have it. And then when you're finished with it, you send it back to them, and the business keeps ownership of the product and the materials, so they don't have to get new materials in. They might stitch it up and fix a few things. They might give it a steam clean or a wash or whatever, and then they put it back out again. So there's these new business models that that we try and explain to our clients and get our clients to sort of shift to. I've gone off tangent a bit again, Brian. I forgot the start of your question.
It was about what has been the
impact. Oh, COVID, yeah. So we definitely noticed, I think, like everybody, just this panic at the start, and definitely lost some work and some businesses that had projects that were about to start with. It was like, we'll have to put that on hold. But we've kept ticking through, and our major clients have all sort of stayed on board. And I think what I'm finding is that a lot of what people are talking about, sort of build back better from COVID, is what we were saying pre-COVID. When I say we, it's kind of the people, and yourself and I and other, sustainability consultants and people in the space who are sort of saying, hey, this system is not sustainable. It needs to change. And I think a lot of people and a lot of businesses and business people are more receptive to it now. And it might be coming from more of a financial motivation for them, but hey, we'll just take that. If we've got their attention and they're listening and they're open to these new ideas that will decrease the environmental impact, hopefully make it regenerative, massively increase their positive social impacts and save them money, make them more profit, then they're really like, oh, okay, win, 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 win. Yeah. I am finding that I laugh when people say post-COVID, we're still totally in COVID, right? But post-lockdown, people and business is definitely more receptive to circular principles and sustainability as a whole.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting, like I've been seeing how the donut economic system is starting to actually get a lot more space and people talking about it, and some cities around the world actually starting to use it. And I think that as a system, because sometimes people need the systems. It's like they need to understand exactly how is this going to look. And having the donut system, I think that it's really interesting. And I do think that we are, and this time for me, like on a lot of different levels, with all of its challenges and death and problems that it brought, it is the shift that we needed. Was something, as you said, like, okay, now what we've been talking about for a long time, now it's like, okay, now we have that motivation, we have that space, and we have the will to actually create the change. And I think that this is why it's a very exciting time. And this is why I love when I'm talking to you, I'm the fact that you're focused on solutions. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's like, yes, let's talk about the problem because we need to understand this, but let's focus on the solution and the direction that we can go, and how to understand, as you said before, that every step in the right direction is the way to go.
It's something we're trying to do a lot more at Go Well, is push that positive message and share those solutions. And as we were sort of saying a bit right at the off air before, Brian, like, we need people to be able to visualize how great the world could be if we just would shift to a different economic system, right? And we could do away with all this inequality, and we could do away with all this stress about the climate and where our food's going to come from, etc. But a lot of people just don't see it, and it's something I have to keep reminding myself, and I think someone like you as well, who gets it and can visualize it, we have to keep reminding ourselves that a lot of people don't see that, right? A lot of people are literally just getting through their day, just trying to pay their bills, or even not necessarily people struggling, people who are doing really well and they're just like, this is great, I've got all I need, and they're just not thinking outside their own space. The world very much kind of revolves around them, and they're not thinking about the next 20, 50, 100 years. And that's Yeah, it's important, I think, to remember that. And so we just really need to engage with those people to make them understand how much better it will be. Because coming back a bit to your question about what is sustainability, another thing I say is sustainability is fundamentally about change management. So we need people to change. We need societies to change. We need businesses and economies and politicians and everything to change quite quickly. We've left it so late because of various reasons, but that we have to change really quickly. And that's really hard. And it's hard for people to change habits and change these things. And you just look at the classic, the whole plastic bag thing, and changing the habit to going without a bag to remembering to take one with you. But people got there. But if you say, don't forget your bag, and then don't eat meat, and then don't eat dairy, and then don't eat this, or don't buy, make sure you buy secondhand clothes, or don't buy from there, or check it's fair trade, or check it's organic, it's just becomes so much for people, right? And so, yeah, we just have to remember that we're asking people to make some big changes. And humans, I guess this goes back a little bit from my time as a fitness trainer, you know, it's hard to get people to change their behaviours, even if it's for their own health and well-being. Even if they so desperately want to have a six-pack and feel really fit or whatever, it was really hard to get them to make the changes to themselves to then get those results. And so, yeah, we've got to kind of remember that on a much bigger macro societal level. And yeah, so what I'm trying to say is the importance of talking positively and talking solutions and talking about how great things will be really helps get people into that, rather than kind of being like, oh, what's the point? Oh, it's all screwed. Oh, you know, that's we really can't go down that path.
Yeah, definitely. With this, I'm going to, because I know that we could be talking for hours and hours, but I'm going to go to the last few questions, the questions that I ask at every episode. So what is the one resource that you would recommend?
So yeah, good question. But in terms of timing, I would really like to put a shout out for Mindful Money. And they are a website where people can go and find out where their investments are. It was just KiwiSaver, so you can go and see where your KiwiSaver is invested, but they've now opened it up to other investments as well. And so many people, I think, again, in this space of people who are wanting to do the right thing and who are trying hard, and they might be, you know, got a bike, and they might be buying secondhand clothes, and they might be eating less meat, but that'll be paling in comparison to the impact that their investments could be having. And they more than likely have their KiwiSaver invested in fossil fuels or agrichemicals or all these things that are doing so much backwards work and really holding us back. So I'd highly plead with people to go to Mindful Money and check where your investments are and change your investments, especially your KiwiSaver, to a provider that is not investing in fossil fuels, not investing in arms and making guns for people around the world. Anyway, but it's just on that. It's up to your morals too. So we've all got our own morals and ethics. But when you go into Mindful Money, it will let you choose what's your priorities and whatnot. And don't like that whole thinking that you have to give up returns to create positive environmental social impacts is so old thinking. If you're still thinking that, you are so behind the times. There's so much research out there, especially especially during COVID and that real drop that we saw. It's all coming back, and we're seeing the ethical investments and the environmentally conscious investments are doing so much better. So it makes so much sense for your own financial well-being and the well-being of your community and the environment to check that out. So yeah, mindful money.
Wonderful. Yeah, I love it. I've talked to Barry and with Karen a couple of times, and like I do think that it's one of the biggest things that a lot of people can do, just with the way that they're investing.
It's just so incredible, and I have just such respect for Barry Coates and what he's done there and his team that have helped him do all the research. It's been such a big job, and it's just so impactful. The fact that they came up with the concept and the idea and understood the problem and then came up with the solution and have delivered it, and it's there for us to utilize, I think it's just incredible.
Yeah, it's wonderful. What is, Nick, your one go-to tip?
My tip would be buy secondhand. The most sustainable, and when I say that, I guess that the least impact on the environment and the most sustainable or the smallest impact that you can have in terms of products is the one that you already own. So your t-shirt that you're already wearing is the most sustainable t-shirt you can have. So keep your clothes, keep your products in alive for as long as you can. Like, I've got an old ThinkPad. I often get the mickey taken out of me when I take it to work meetings or whatever by this old ThinkPad laptop. I bought it secondhand 3 years ago, and it's still going strong. And yes, it's bigger and clunkier than these flash MacBooks or latest thinnest little ThinkPads or whatever come out, but I don't need those. All those accessories I don't need. So this secondhand thing, all my clothes, I stress out so much buying new clothes. I try really hard to buy secondhand. Sure, now and again I might buy something new, but buy secondhand.
Wonderful. What has been your latest small act of kindness?
Yeah, I read this because you obviously sent these through, and I was like, shit, I better do something kind really quickly. Well, I made pikelets for my partner yesterday morning. I made the batter for her. She had to fry them up herself, which she was a bit annoyed about. I always feel a bit embarrassed saying this, but I shouldn't really. But I mentor a young boy through this organisation called Big Buddy, which I've been doing for 18 months or so, and he's 11 years old now, and so it's for fatherless boys, and so for whatever reason they've not got a father in their life, and I've been mentoring him for the last 18 months, and pretty much every Sunday I meet up with him and hang out with him for, a couple of hours, sometimes 5 or 6 hours, depending on what's going on. Last weekend we went fishing. it was fishing. I was so keen to go fishing. So we drove all the way out there and then got this fishing rod and got the squid to put on the bait, and then the hook just fell off. So I had to quickly get out my phone and learn how to tie a knot to keep a hook on your line, and did all that. And then, trudged out to the water, and we threw the line out, and it got snagged and got caught, and that was it. That was our fishing experience. And then we bought him an ice cream. He was happy with his ice cream, and I don't know. That's probably
that's a big one. That's not even a small one. That's a huge act of kindness. So yeah, that's a good one.
It's cool. He gives back to me as well. Goes back twice.
Definitely. Well, I think this is the power of kindness, that what we give, we receive.
And yeah.
That's how, in terms of the circular model.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a circular model, so definitely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you watch Derek? It's a show by Ricky Gervais on Netflix.
No.
It's quite, I don't know if you're into Ricky Gervais, but he's got some good lines in there. And Derek's this sort of intellectually disabled guy. He's the main character, and he's talking exactly about kindness. And you just reminded me then, because he's sort of saying kindness is great, because the person giving the kindness feels really good, and the person receiving the kindness feels really good, and everyone just feels really great. And so he's like, be kind. Like, it's just a great thing for everyone.
I must watch that.
yeah.
Cool. One last question. What is the one thing that you wish the world or everyone knew?
That the people who created this economic system that we follow now did not understand anything about climate change or how the real world functions and the natural systems of the planet. And they made it up. They are theories. The economic system is made up of theories, and it's make-believe. Humans have made it up. The laws of the universe have been discovered and proven, and they cannot be changed. We have to live within those if we're going to live as a species on this planet. So, I think that's the one thing I wish the world we knew. We can change our economic laws and our societal laws. We cannot change the laws of the real world and the laws of the universe.
Wonderful. That's a big one, and I think that's a really interesting one to actually have a little bit of a think about. Lastly, how can we help promote you? Where can people find you?
GoWellConsulting.co.nz is my consultancy website, and GoWell Consulting on Instagram, Facebook, Nick Morrison on LinkedIn. Yeah, feel free to reach out. My email is nick@gowellconsulting.co.nz. Just feel free to get in touch, and if you're a business person and or you work in a business that wants to be part of creating the circular, regenerative, and inclusive future, reach out, and we'd be really love to chat and help you on that journey. That's what we do. So, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, and definitely, like, I think that the more businesses that get on board and actually be able to do a little of understanding of their supply chain and a little bit of the just understanding what they are doing, where can they go, understanding all of that, and understanding also how to communicate what they are doing right. Mm-hmm. Because I think that this is one of the things that I find so good as like in your website, for example, like just showcasing the brands that you're working with that are actually being part of the solution and are doing the best that they can. And I think that all of these brands deserve a shout out and deserve to be celebrated because they are doing the right thing. So
agreed.
Yeah. Definitely. Thank you so much, Nick, for taking the time to speak with me once more, and congratulations on your baby girl.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to be here and for sharing a little bit of your journey and your expertise. And for everyone that has been listening, I would love to know, what have you learned from this episode? If you have any comments or questions, send them in. I will put the link for all of the Facebook, Instagram, and the website that Nick just mentioned so that you can check it out. And we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you, Brian.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
What did you like the most about this episode? Take a moment to think about what change you can make in your life today.
Share your conscious action on social media using #ConsciousAction and tagging @ConsciousActionNZ so we can celebrate your impact on the world and create a ripple effect.
One easy action we would love for you to take right now is to share, like, and subscribe to this podcast. This will help us get these messages out into the world and inspire more people to take conscious action in their own lives, contributing to the better world we hope for.